A popular local media personality stumbles towards sobriety. She shares her story this morning. Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.9, and thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9. Also, make sure to catch our podcast on iTunes or through the WJCT app. Just ahead, a revealing conversation with Tracy Collins, a.k.a. Tracy.com, on her journey to sobriety as she takes your calls. Do you have a loved one with a drinking problem? Do you have that problem? Get on the line now. Share your stories and thoughts. 549-2937 to join the conversation. Then later, author Tim Gilmore says, you may have heard the name Isaiah Hart. Maybe you've driven across the Hart Bridge. I do every morning. But chances are you probably don't know the fascinating story behind the founder of Jacksonville. We'll peek inside Gilmore's new work, The Book of Isaiah. Plus, a look ahead to Jacksonville's world-class art festival coming up next month in the Urban Core, Art Republic. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, she is the lovable local personality known to one and all as Tracy.com. Tracy Collins has appeared on local TV for years, always with a smile and a bubbly personality. You've seen her covering every event you can imagine around town for different media outlets over the years. Take a listen.
I'm Tracy.com, your official phonologist, and you are watching another TDC experience. And today we are at the Party Shop, which is located near Target across from the Avenues Mall. And you've got to check this out. They are in the process of moving, which means that you are going to get your Halloween costumes cheap, cheap, cheap.
Tracy branded herself as a phonologist. But behind the smiles and the packed social calendar, she was secretly dealing with a problem she kept hidden, one affecting millions of Americans, alcoholism. Binge drinking that nearly killed her, heavy daily drinking that she hid from the public, from friends, from family, until it was impossible to hide anymore. Tracy turned 50 this month, and at her birthday party, she revealed her problem to the world.
Well, I think the best way to describe it is that, you know, the majority of my friends drink, and I drank with them, and they were good at it. They have wine at dinner. They have many beers and cocktails at a fundraiser. They enjoy a shot for a birthday or a 10 a.m. beer at a tailgate party, and there's no judgment there by any stretch of the imagination. And I would join them with that. But then after the party, I would continue to drink. I was either zero cocktails or drink to blackout and then pass out kind of drinker. And I mean, it wasn't going to continue. At least I wasn't going to be alive at the end of it.
It was that realization that Tracy was possibly going to die that sent her into treatment. Now she's written a book about her journey. It's called Stumbling Into Sobriety. And in that newfound sobriety, Tracy Collins has started on a path toward a new life and a new purpose. She's going to share it with us this morning. Tracy Collins joins us live in studio and takes your calls. Tracy, good morning.
Wow, that was pretty surreal listening to that. I felt like it was kind of an out-of-body experience. Thank you for that, Melissa.
Sure. And we're already getting calls as we share Tracy Collins' story and her new book, Stumbling Into Sobriety. We want your calls. Do you have a loved one in your family who's an alcoholic? Are you struggling with a drinking problem? Do you just want to connect with Tracy? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online and send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org. Tweets to @MelissaInJax. You can weigh in on Facebook as well on our Facebook page. And, you know, you had this 80s party for your 50th birthday, mm-hmm. and I was one of many people that was invited. I was so excited. And everybody got excited about getting costumes and so forth. But most of the people that came out to the party didn't know what you were going to reveal, and mm-hmm. I certainly didn't. I was completely surprised because, as I said in the intro, people all over town saw you a certain way, and they did not know what you were privately dealing with.
That's right. And, you know, I would get a lot of the, you're so happy all the time. People would say that to me all the time. You're so happy all the time. And I would just, you know, look at them with a closed mouth smile and say, mm-hmm. And the truth was, I was not faking it when I was in public. I mean, I am a social person. That is what makes me happy. But once the door closed, that was it. I don't have a significant other. I don't have children. My family is far, far away. And I would organize my time with my friends, very manipulative kind of calendar according to my drinking schedule. And that is what alcohol does. It isolates people. And so I was very good at it. But the walls were closing in, Melissa. I could feel it. Something was going to give.
At what point did you hit, as they say, mm-hmm. rock bottom with your drinking?
Well, it was typical of me to spiral if something very emotional happened. And then I would usually pick myself back up. I would stop drinking for a period of time and then lie to myself that I didn't have a problem because I could stop for a while. But it would then go in back into the binge drinking. But in this particular instance, my father passed away. So I started to spiral and I started to lose days. I would go to work. And mm-hmm. if you asked me the next day what I did the day before, I couldn't remember. And I started having these health issues where I thought I had early onset dementia. Because I could have a conversation with you, walk away, and 15 minutes later go, oh my gosh, I can't remember what we just talked about. And so I knew that something was about to give. I was either going to get a DUI or worse.
You'd never gotten one.
Never.
That's extraordinary.
Well, it's one of the issues, though, is because, you know, when you take these tests, these online tests of am I an alcoholic, some of them, I think, are just silly questions. Like, have you ever missed work? Well, yeah, you know, half of America misses it the day after the Super Bowl, you know. So, yes, I've missed work, but I'm not an alcoholic. And then the questions, I started answering yes to more and more and more of them. But I was justifying it with, but I've never gotten a DUI, and I've never done this, and I've never done that, so I must be okay.
Denial is so powerful.
It is.
For so many of us, for so many Americans that struggle with this.
It's so true.
Yeah.
I could feel the walls closing in, and then, not to give away the climax of the book, but I went home for my dad's funeral, and my sister, who had lost her child a year before, said to me, I got real with my sister, very real. If you want to know how real this book gets, by the way, just in the booklet, the chapter book, there's defecation and urination. I get real. I get raw.
How alcohol makes you lose control of everything in your life.
Yes. So I went home and I shared these horrific stories with my sister. And she just looked at me silently, listening. I didn't know what was going through her head. And she said, in 1 year and 7 weeks, I lost my son and my father. And if I lose you too, I won't survive. Because right now, I am barely hanging on. And I knew that was true. And so I knew I had to survive to save her.
And you went into treatment.
I did.
Where did you go for treatment?
I went to the Greenfield Center, and it is an intensive outpatient treatment facility. So I had come clean with my job. I had let them know, because I was really close to my boss, so I let her know, and the look of relief on her face and the tears rolling down her face let me know that I had gotten to the point where I really wasn't hiding it well at all. And
she knew.
She knew. But she couldn't say anything to me. I mean, I think it was at that point an HR issue. And so, and that's just my assumption, by the way. But so I called with her encouragement. I called our insurance company and found out that and this is what I want to encourage people to do. I found out I would have never even had to say anything. You can just call your insurance company, let them know what's happening, and they give you a list of where you're covered. And in my situation, I went to the Greenfield Center after work from 5:30 to 8:30 for 10 weeks, Monday through Thursday. And nobody would have had to have known.
After you got out of treatment, you started writing.
I did. So here's the background to that story. When I was 13, I was in a very serious car accident, 120 miles an hour, drunk driving. The driver was drunk, hit a tree, and I survived with no injuries, by the way. And I got an anonymous letter in the mail. It was in a woman's handwriting, and it said, God saved you for a reason. Go find your purpose. And so that's one of the reasons that drives me to be a champion of the community, is that letter that was written to me all those years ago. So I was fully... Now, understand that when I was deep in the sobriety, I didn't care if I lived or I died. I really didn't want to live, but I also didn't want to die. But I thought that my purpose was done. God was done with me, because I just, that's the point I'd gotten to. So I have a lot of faith in God, always have since I was a child. And I kept thinking, well, as I was coming out of this haze, I was like, okay, apparently he's not done with me. And I was fully expecting it to take a couple of years to figure out what that would be. Within 5 weeks of being in intensive outpatient treatment, I had this vision of, because I've always learned in church, use your God-given talents. Take what God has given you as your talent and use it for that purpose. So I was like, well, I know how to write. I have a microphone for the city. I am going to let people know that the face of alcoholism is not the guy under the bridge. This is the face of alcoholism.
This bubbly, beautiful face that we all know and love.
Thank you.
Your book is Stumbling Into Sobriety. Can you read a short excerpt from it?
Absolutely. So this was, this is very short, by the way. So if you want me to read something else, I can as well. But so this is what went on with me daily. My mind is consumed, spinning and spinning and spinning. I probably shouldn't drink today. I'll just take a break until Friday. Well, maybe one mini. Or three. Three will be enough to get me to that happy place. No, no, I shouldn't drink today. At least just for today. Well, maybe I'll grab some wine on the way home. That won't be too bad. Ugh, stop thinking about it. My brain ignores the command. And once again, an entire part of my day is wasted, negotiating in my head.
This is what goes on inside an alcoholic's head.
Mm-hmm.
It's the narrative that's playing in your mind.
Yeah.
According to the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, 15.1 million adults in this country have what's known as an alcohol use disorder.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of Americans.
Right.
Lots of calls for Tracy.com. Tracy Collins, do you have alcohol abuse in your family? What are your thoughts and questions for Tracy? It's 549-2937. Tracy, another Tracy, is on the line from Mandarin this morning. Good morning, Tracy. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good morning. It looks like your story is like a friend's son who got into a car accident, barely survived, and he wanted to become a big shot. But then, now what it is, he drinks every night and doesn't listen to his parents, but I am his second mother in a kind. I take him out to dinner and sit down and try to tell him he needs to quit. And he says, Auntie, it tastes so good in college. It was like coffee. We five friends will get up first thing in the morning is an alcohol. And I see it is ruining his liver. He's very young, haven't started life as yet, very bright. How can I help him? I heard if you put him in a center, sometimes they start using drugs there. Can you guide me? How can I help him?
Can I ask you a quick question? Is he functioning like I was? Is he, you know, doing things outside of the house and able to carry on?
When he is with me, when he's sober, he's the brightest boy I have seen. And I am a pretty educated lady. But otherwise, I think it puts him, he had a brain trauma. He was in ICU for a long time. When he's sober, he's so bright and he wants to be helped. But then comes evening and he goes and buys a bottle and drinks, and then he doesn't get up until 2. it's just hurting the parents. I want to help him. I really want to bring him back to normal.
Okay, well, I want to preface my answer by saying I am not a medical person, obviously. In fact, when you read the book, you'll notice in any and also in any speaking engagements that I do, I don't refer to any programs other than my own experience at the Greenfield Center. I only speak from my own experience. So what my experience was is the first thing that needs to happen is he needs to get an evaluation, because an evaluation will determine whether he could do what I did, which is IOP, which is, as explained by my doctor, is someone who can physically go past a liquor store and not have to stop at it, or inpatient treatment, which is somebody who just can't do that. They have to kind of be closed in and away from alcohol completely. Mm-hmm. So that's what he needs first as an evaluation. I would encourage calling the Greenfield Center and setting that up. That is the first step. The second thing is that I would encourage him that one of the reasons why it took me so long to ask for help is because I liked the party. I didn't want the party to stop. It was fun. Mm-hmm. It was fun until it stopped being fun.
Right.
But what happens is, in my world anyway, is that happy place of you know, having that high of being drunk where people then quit and then go to sleep, I just kept going. And that happy time frame got smaller and smaller and smaller as I started to want to get higher and higher and higher,
and
faster and faster.
To drink more and more.
Exactly.
To feel that way.
Exactly. So, with that said, life is so much better after. You hear people say that, but you go, is it? Yes. I'm here to tell you, I still go to parties. For me personally, I don't have a problem being around it in sobriety. That's not true for everybody. I still go to fundraisers. My birthday party, there was drinking at my birthday party. I still do everything I did before.
Yeah.
Without alcohol.
And recovery is a lifelong journey.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's alcohol addiction, drug addiction, it's a journey. And people can have missteps, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've thought about this, too, as we prepared to talk to you today. Alcohol and women, women and alcoholism, women who drink heavily are more likely to develop disease of the liver.
Mm-hmm.
They're more susceptible to alcohol-related heart disease than men. The alcohol abuse in women is particularly deadly.
So here's my medical story. I would go every year for my annual physical and get blood work. And every year the doctor would say, have you been drinking a lot? Your enzymes are elevated. And I would go, yeah. And so I would quit for 30 days. I would go back, get retested, and my enzymes would be fine. And I would think I was fine. I didn't realize there were many, many other ways to die.
It could contribute to other inflammation, other disease in the body.
Yeah. Or Melissa, I woke up more than once at the top of my steps with severe rug burn because I had passed out at the top of my steps and fortunately gone forward.
Wow. Instead of falling down the stairs.
Yes, ma'am.
And cracking your head.
Yes,
maybe.
Ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Lots of calls for Tracy Collins. Tracy.com. So much more to her story than any of us ever knew. Her book is Stumbling Into Sobriety. Tiffany is in Atlantic Beach this morning. Hi, Tiffany. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Well, Tracy, I just moved to the area, and I got sober in 2005 from New York City. And I just have to tell you that this segment is so, so, so great to hear this morning. It's so hard to be sober. It's hard for me after this many years. You know, I started with an alcoholic family and hid my drinking in my career, which is also in media and event marketing and all of that. But for me, it was the same things you're talking about, the blacking out, going beyond everybody else, you know, bruises all over my body. I fell down, just all those kinds of things that you hear about, and then hiding that from everyone.
Mm-hmm.
So the shame that comes with it, and then having everyone say, well, Tiffany's in recovery, and that feeling that nobody wants to drink around you, and then you feel worse, and then you want, and then for me, I would want to drink more,
mm-hmm.
to numb those, that feeling of shame. So I have yet to find a good home group now that I'm in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested to hear what you recommend in terms of your recovery out of your outpatient program.
Okay, that's a great question because I actually cannot speak to that part of it publicly, but Tiffany, I would very much welcome your phone call to my personal cell. Just reach out to me via Facebook, and I will talk to you about that off the air.
Just find Tracy Collins on Facebook.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And she makes an interesting point, too, about the shame, because I made it a point. I consciously made it a point that the devil was not going to take control of my mind any longer. Shame was not going to be an issue in my life. I had been in shame for so long. I said, nope, not today. And so making this public and utilizing my influence in the community for the purpose of it, I took it back.
There is a lot of shame and stigma around addiction. It is a disease.
It is.
What we know about alcohol addiction and genetics, among those abusing alcohol, some people are genetically predisposed to have a higher risk of addiction.
Mm-hmm.
There are some social factors as well,
sure,
that you meant, that I think you referred to that, mm-hmm, that you had that extremely strong social pull toward drinking, but mm-hmm, you also drank alone.
Yes.
It's a complicated disease, and there's no one simple explanation for why somebody walks this path in life. But certainly addiction is a disease,
mm-hmm,
whether it's alcohol abuse, drug abuse. And people need treatment and support.
They do.
And they don't need to be shamed.
You absolutely do not need to be ashamed. In fact, I felt like it was a huge mirage. I saw this mountain in front of me, and all I kept thinking was, how am I going to tell my boss? How am I going to tell my parents? How am I going to tell, the people of Jacksonville that I am closely associated with in alcohol environments? Why I'm not drinking. And once I spoke my truth, I got nothing but support. And I would encourage Tiffany, anybody who doesn't give her support or makes her feel ashamed, then you just need to cut those people out of your life, period.
And we're getting lots of tweets for Tracy. Daniel tweets the show, I'm inspired by Tracy.com. No problem is insurmountable. Tracy is a joy. Brian, the loss of a parent made me sympathetic to the urge to disappear into a bottle as well. Often grief, pain, tragic life events, stress, those can be triggers for this as well. We can keep talking about that, but let's take a few more calls. Mary is visiting Jacksonville. Hi, Mary. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, go ahead, Mary.
I'm so glad you're addressing this topic. Right, I'm here from Tennessee. My brother was found on the sidewalk last Friday morning, unresponsive, and was taken to the morgue.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
He has been drinking for 30 years, and I, his big sister, who was tasked with taking care of him, just did not know how to take care of somebody who was addressing this, and he obviously wanted to stop. And I guess that's what my question is.
Yeah.
I mean, I fantasized about buying a little farm 10 miles from anywhere and putting him on there where he wouldn't be able to get any alcohol. It gets to the point where you just want to put someone in a room where you can only feed them healthy food and they can't get anything unhealthy. But of course you can't control someone else's life that way. And I just wonder, what can you do to help?
Right.
When you love someone who is falling and just declining, and he died. I think his heart may have been mm-hmm. what killed him.
Yeah.
Sure. Oh, Mary, I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry that you had to.
I never thought it would be his heart, but apparently mm-hmm. it was enlarged. And
mm-hmm.
gosh, the complications of this disease are just it's your whole body.
It
yeah.
is.
So, yeah.
And I'm so sorry that that's what brought you to Jacksonville, Mary. Gosh, I'm so sorry.
Oh, thank
and thanks for calling. And she brings up
such an important point, mm-hmm. which is that addiction brings the whole family in.
It does.
And this brings up all these other issues. Are you enabling the addict? Are you codependent with the addict?
Mm-hmm.
Only the person who is in the throes of addiction can ultimately make the decision mm-hmm. to get help.
Right. And, you know, in terms of, I could feel that Mary, you know, would like to hear an answer today. I'm not that person. I think as popular as this topic is, it would be a good idea to bring in Dr. Jackson from the Greenfield Center to address that part of it at some point. But with that said, when I was in the throes of it, I remember my girlfriend, you know, my girlfriend, Hank Watson, she said to me, she's one of the few people who had seen me at my absolute worst. And she said, what is it about you? What is going on? Because this entire city loves you, but you don't love yourself and you need to figure out why. That's what treatment does, is it gets to the core issue of why you're doing it. Because at some point your body just craves it. But there is underlying issues of some sort, and they vary so wide that professional help is the only way for you to get to the bottom of it.
And the person has to make the decision mm-hmm. ultimately.
They do. Mary, please, please don't blame yourself.
Yeah, Mary, don't feel guilty. One more call. It's Jason on the West Side.
Hi, thanks for taking the call, and thanks so much for doing this. I just wanted to share my experience real quick. I really appreciate raising awareness. There's so much shame attached to addiction. At 42 years old, I was diagnosed with ADHD and found that I was actually self-medicating with alcohol, you know, sneaking off out of work to go and get a drink.
Mm-hmm.
And after about a year, I've been taking this medication and found that I was just steeped into addiction because I had another issue. And I've been able to go, and I haven't had a drink in over a year now, and the medication's working great for me. And I just found that after talking with my therapist, realized that I have another issue and then I'm covering it up with alcohol, and just would love to hear your comments on that. And also really, really appreciate you talking about this. It's time that we stop treating addiction like it's a moral defect in people. It's a disease. It's an issue. Thanks
so
much.
Sure. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, Jason. Talking about uncovering things, I'm working with somebody right now and uncovering some things, and even all the way through treatment, I was like, Dr. Jackson, what is wrong with me? Is there? And he said, you know what? If we can't figure it out yet, so maybe you're just somebody who's well, as I got further and further into looking into my own issues, mm-hmm. that's getting uncovered as well. So what he says is true.
Mm-hmm. And ultimately, what does it matter in the end as long as
yes.
you do the work? And we all have our work to do, don't
yes,
we?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. June in St. Augustine. One last call. It's June in St. Augustine. Hi, June.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I just wanted to discuss something that I think a lot of people with the current opiate addiction rates other people may be dealing with. I had a car accident anyway. I got addicted to opiates. I quit them. I moved to Singapore, so I quit
wow.
taking opiates. When I moved back, I thought my family would be happy, but my entire family is addicted to opiates. And they have completely cut me out of their life. And so, this year my dad died, I lost my health in a hurricane, and I'm getting a divorce, and I don't have...
June, I'm so sorry. You feel so alone right now, I can tell. You're not alone, though, June. You're not alone.
No, and June, I would also encourage you to reach out to me via Facebook. Just send me your phone number. I'll call you off the air. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, see, this is...
there's just so many people that are addicted, and they don't want to admit it because of the shame, you know? I mean,
sure.
I tried to admit it to them because I thought that they would, be more open to admitting their own. But instead, they just shame me about my addiction all the time, and they don't admit their own. It's really been difficult. So I just want to let other people know that it is going to be hard, but you just have to do it, because if I'm able to stay sober and be somewhat happy, even though I've lost a lot this year and done it alone, it can be done, and it's definitely worth it. So
June, I know it's been hard, but I really appreciate you calling. I'm going to put you on hold so that we can give you a little information on how you can contact Tracy.
Yes.
And how can people reach you, because you have a project?
I do. So, and by the way, the reason why I have this project is because of people like June. The reason I get up in the morning is to address that one person, just that one person who is hiding behind that door and has nobody to go to. That is why I'm doing what I do. So the Crushed Velvet Project is a alcohol abuse awareness project. I'm not trying to make the world a world of teetotalers. I'm trying to reach that person who knows that they're at the end. The tomorrow may bring death. So I am in the process of writing a full-length book, but right now you can support my project donating to my project. I'm doing a WJCT special right now. If you donate $19 to the project, you will get my chapter book, which is excerpts of my life leading up to the day that I walked into treatment and ending with my first meeting with Dr. Jackson. So it stands alone. But the money will be used to pay for editing, to pay for any publishing fees, and also any fees associated with getting the word out there. So I will do my due diligence to put your money to help others. I want to make that promise to you. But you can make that donation today at thecrushedvelvetproject.com. And in return, I will be giving $5 of your donation back to WJCT to keep important programs like yours, Melissa, on the air.
Oh, wonderful. Thanks for that. And more importantly, thanks for sharing your story.
Hmm.
Thank you for being here today.
You bet.
It's an incredible story, and Tracy's story is available online, as she said. So check it out, and we'll check back in with you in a little while.
That sounds great.
All right. Much more still ahead later, a look ahead to this fall's Art Republic Festival in Jacksonville. But up next, another author, Tim Gilmore, and his look at the story of the founder of Jacksonville, Isaiah Hart. We'll be right back.
UF Health Proton Therapy Institute. Over a decade of proton therapy experience, research advances, and compassionate care for cancer patients. In Jacksonville and online at floridaproton.org.
World Affairs Council and UNF, partnering to engage citizens in becoming better informed participants in the global community. November 14th, Jillian Tett. The Global Outlook, America, China, and Beyond. Information, worldaffairscouncil.jax.org.
I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. From the State House to the Everglades to the Panhandle, Florida has a unique story.
So join us every Friday for the Florida Roundup.
And hear from newsmakers, journalists, and Floridians from all across the state
about the issues that matter to you.
The Florida Roundup, Fridays at 1 on WJCT.
As opioids flooded America by the truckload, a top official at the DEA tried to stop the shipments.
Everybody was making money and people were dying.
The companies pushed back. So did his agency.
Cases would just sit and languish for weeks, for months, for a year.
How the government failed to stop an epidemic on the next Reveal.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
This week, a special Halloween edition of WJCT's Radio Theater, Shadow Over Innsmouth, performed by the Atlanta Radio Theater Company. Tune in Sunday night at 7 here on 89.9.
Welcome back. Well, chances are you've driven across the downtown bridge that bears his name. But it's also likely that you probably don't know the story of Isaiah Hart. Yes, Hart, the founder of Jacksonville. And he was a complicated character, to say the least. Here are just a few tidbits about Isaiah Hart. Hart built a 35-foot-tall monument as his tomb. What a humble guy. He made his wealth by stealing and then reselling slaves. He left a share of his will to his slave girlfriend. He helped the first mayor of Jacksonville kidnap another founder of the city's child. He even left quasi-pagan sentiments in his will. Who was this guy? Well, Isaiah Hart's fascinating story is told in a new book. It's by author and professor Tim Gilmore. He joins us now with a look inside the Book of Isaiah. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Melissa. Thanks for having us.
And this is the first book to come with a soundtrack. Yeah, it features the illustrations of local artist Shep Shepherd and the music of Dead Shepherd Sounds. We'll listen to those in a minute. Shep Shepherd, good morning to you as well.
Hi.
All right. Now, we've all driven across the Hart Bridge, and everybody kind of vaguely knows that there was this guy named Isaiah Hart. But in your book, we learn a lot more about him. He sounds like he was pretty interesting.
He definitely was interesting. He was a strange character. I think it's fascinating how people are written about at different time periods. In middle of the 20th century, when there was a campaign to name a new bridge after Isaiah Hart, he was written about, he was whitewashed. He was president of the Historical Society for a long time, Dina Snodgrass, wrote about him and she actually referred to his slaves as his employees. And she mentioned nothing about how Hart, acquired his wealth. And she certainly mentioned nothing about the fact that he probably had children with one of his slaves named Amy Hickman, and he left a share of his will to Amy Hickman.
And he built his wealth by stealing other people's slaves and then reselling them on the open slave market? Is that right?
Yes. So there's an excellent book about Ossian Hart, who was the 10th governor of Florida and Isaiah Hart's son. And actually, their dynamic is fascinating. But Cantor Brown Jr., who wrote this book, documents, Hart's raiding of plantations in the area and stealing slaves.
What a great guy.
Oh, right.
And a fine, upstanding man.
Founder of our city.
Yeah, so, right.
Every
time you drive across that sickly green Hart Bridge now, we'll all be thinking about this. By the way, this is not just a book. This is a multimedia experience. Tim's new book features the illustrations and the music of Shep Shepherd and the music of his group Dead Shepherd Sounds. Let's take a quick listen to that. All right, Shep Shepherd, at Tim's Book of Isaiah reading, not only will people get to do the book signing, they're going to be able to take in your music and some visual art too, right?
Yeah, so we've had some students at FSCJ and some other individuals do some videos for some of our songs, and we're going to project those and play some of the music after Tim's done some readings. It should be pretty cool.
This is a whole multimedia experience. Sounds pretty interesting.
It is, and Shep also did illustrate. He's one of these people who's good at everything, and I'm a one-trick pony.
I know the feeling.
Of being good at everything.
No, right? Of being a one-trick pony.
He did illustrations for the book, too. And he's actually going to have, some art for sale at the event, too. So it really is a multimedia event.
Okay. This is coming up Saturday.
Yes.
The Book of Isaiah reading, visual art, soundtrack, and book signing this Saturday in Five Points, the second floor above the new Hoptinger.
Mm-hmm.
What time do people need to come out?
8 o'clock, and you can get tickets ahead of time. They are $15 and $25, $25 if you want the book. You'll also get CD, and at the door, those prices become $25 and $30, but you can go to 904tix.com and find tickets.
That's going to be a lot of fun, and let's also talk quickly about another cool event you guys are involved with, the Jax by Jax Literary Arts Festival. That's coming up in a couple of weeks, also in Riverside at Park and King Streets, right?
Yes.
What's going to be happening?
Well, so it's Jax by Jax 4, you know. FSCJ has given us a lot of help this year in sponsoring, and we have more writers than we've had previously. There's 28 writers at 14 venues, so it'll start at 1:30 at Il Desco with a student showcase, and from 3 to 6 there will be, 15-minute readings at different venues. You can look at fscj.edu/jacksbyjacks for a schedule, and then there will be an after party from 7 to 9 down at Cork Arts District.
And what you're trying to do with both of these events is share the history of the city, it sounds like, but also just support the local literary, local arts scene?
Yeah.
You came on this show knowing it was a talk show, right, Shep? This is a talk show.
I work with Tim, and Tim's an amazing teacher, but he's also an amazing, inspiring presence for writers. And
that's,
he really,
that's why I brought him on.
I'm a huge fan, but he's worked with a lot of our students who've then gone on to publish and have even appeared at Jax by Jax and read. So it's it's just an extension of that kind of graciousness.
As has Shep. There's a wonderful writer who's based here in Jacksonville named Heather Peters. She was one of Shep's students and one of my students in years past. We were just talking about this actually out in the green room, that Jacksonville needs to tell its stories, and it needs to be aware of who it is and what it has going on, and the work that's being done here, and also, the stories from its past that it needs to broadcast. And
you are really leading the way on that, Tim Gilmore. As I was saying to Tracy Collins, the author that was in here before you, It seems to me like every couple of weeks you roll out of bed and a new book sort of falls out from between the sheets, and you kind of roll in here and say, here's my latest book, a fascinating new story, little known facts about our past that we didn't know about, but now we do, thanks to you.
Well,
you're one of the most prolific writers I've ever seen.
Well, I'm obsessive compulsive, but but seriously, I grew up here, and when I was young, I heard people saying that Jacksonville was boring, and I understood why they said that, but it is a place full of stories, and sometimes it seems like you can just kind of wring the Southern Gothic out of the air.
I'm glad you're doing it. I mean, I lived in Chicago for years, and everybody knows about Mrs. O'Leary's cow. Everybody knows the legend of the billy goat, and the Cubs. People here need to know about Isaiah Hart and his crazy stealing of the slaves.
I agree.
And his slave girlfriend.
Right.
They need to know about Clara White.
Yeah.
You've written that book. They need to know about James Weldon Johnson.
Yes, they do.
And all of these things. And so I encourage everybody to come out to this event. Okay.
Thank you. Thanks, Melissa.
It's a signing and a party and a multimedia event this Saturday in Five Points, the Book of Isaiah. Tim Gilmore and the very talkative Shep Shepherd. I'm just teasing you. I'm just teasing you. Guys, thank you so much for being here. It sounds like a really fun time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
All right. And in a moment, Art Republic disrupting Jacksonville's art scene. We'll look at that after this.
These are risky times for retail. Since 2001, department stores have lost 18 times more workers than coal mines have. Some of the biggest names are selling their prime real estate or lying empty. When a store says everything must go, does that have to include the building? Next time on 1A.
Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Hi, this is Chris Thiele. This week, a Prairie Home Companion will broadcast live from Pasadena, California, with our special guests, Dan Auerbach, Hilary Hahn will be there, Robert Finley, also Fiona Apple, and Nick Offerman. My goodness, what a show. Madison Cunningham is joining me for some duets. We'll have our band, The First Call Radio Players, a bit of comedy from the Acting Company, and a brand new Song of the Week. Hope you'll join us.
Saturday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
November 11th of each year is the day that we ensure veterans know that we deeply appreciate the sacrifices they have made in their lives to keep our country free. Help WJCT honor our veterans during the month of November by submitting a name that we may add to our on-air thank you announcements. Go to wjct.org/veterans.
I'm David Luckin, host of the Electro Lounge, inviting you to join me Tuesday through Saturday nights on 89.9 when we bring you music from around the world. All styles played, all songs considered. Join me for the Electro Lounge, Tuesday through Saturday nights.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, Jacksonville's big downtown Urban Core Arts event, Art Republic, is said to be even bigger and better than ever this year. The inaugural event in 2016 made a big splash by creating huge murals on a variety of blank walls on buildings across the Urban Core District. You've probably seen some of them if you've been driving around through the area in the year since. Now, the 2017 artist lineup is out for this year with 19 headliners, and the extended 12-day exhibition will come to town November 1st through the 12th with public art exhibits, a fashion design gala, a lecture series, even an immersive digital art exhibit. The goal, to designate Jacksonville's downtown urban core as a nationally recognized art district. Jessica Santiago is the founder of Art Republic and the owner and curator of Wall Street Fine Art Gallery. And she's here with a look ahead to this. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you. And when you kicked this off in 2016, it was a revelation and a really disruptive arts event for Jacksonville. And it left a legacy behind, these incredible large murals all over downtown. This year, it's going to be even bigger, it sounds like. What's on tap?
It is. It's been growing so rapidly. Our team has just had the most incredible experience as it's unfolded. This year, we really got to come to know the movement a lot more and really begin to kind of receive the inspiration on where is it trying to go, what are going to be the main pillars that we can focus on that will help not only revitalize the downtown core, but also put Jacksonville on the map as developing a new model for the art industry, creating truly a global movement. So the biggest add this year is the digital art exhibition.
And what's going to be happening at that?
So we are very, very excited to be hosting Miguel Chevalier. Miguel Chevalier is considered the pioneer of digital art, the leading digital artist in the world. His only other U.S. exhibition was doing an installation with Stephen Hawking at Cambridge.
Wow.
And so he's coming to Jacksonville, and he will be the headlining artist for the digital exhibition. He's doing an interactive virtual reality wall. And Krista Kim will be returning. She worked with us last year. She's doing an immersive digital exhibition as well. And then Rio, who is actually been really well known in the hip hop industry. He's been a songwriter. He currently is doing the visuals for Beyonce and Rihanna. He also works with Sprite and Nike.
You might have heard of them.
Yeah. He's really excited. This is his first actual gallery exhibition. And Fabian Forbon from Munich. So this is a really world-class exhibition that we will get to host here in Jacksonville, but also start being a part of this global movement of the art world really beginning to embrace digital art.
That's your goal. You're trying to make Jacksonville a global player in the art world and in this emerging digital art space.
Absolutely. You know, it's it really kind of is like the old saying that we know, if you build it, they will come. You know, we have such a desire to have a thriving art and culture scene as a community. And it really is just about being intentional and building it and bringing world-renowned artists here to work with our local community and really show the world what is going on here in Jacksonville.
Now, in addition to the digital work that will be done by these global amazing talents, as I mentioned, last year, the large-scale murals that were created and left behind were the legacy from last year. Will more of that be done this year, too?
Yes, definitely. We have 19 new murals coming with an incredible, incredible lineup. I mean, last year, Jacksonville as a community, we really took care of all the artists that came. That word spread like wildfire amongst the global street art movement. So this year, when we sent out the invitation, all artists confirmed within 48 hours, which was, it's really record time to get that kind of commitment from such headlining artists. So we are really honored. The artists all love the city of Jacksonville. They love what the movement stands for. So they're really bringing their best.
This is coming in, gosh, a couple of weeks.
Yes.
How can people be part of it? How can people reserve their tickets and make sure to check out some of this incredible talent that's going to be on display?
Yes, our social media team does an incredible job of really showcasing, letting the community know who's coming, why they're so significant in the world, and keeping them engaged with all of our events. The artists all begin to arrive November 1st. The digital art exhibition opens November 4th, and the fashion design gala on November 10th. But the walls, you'll start seeing color go on the walls by November 2nd.
She's Jessica Santiago, creator of Art Republic. Can't wait to see it all happen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
That's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Murchard. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Download our app to catch our podcast or get it on iTunes. And make sure, if you missed anything this morning, to hear our rebroadcast tonight at 8. 1A is up next. Store No More, a retail reality check. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.